You start a podcast like this because rather than just like, hey guys, welcome to the podcast, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Anyway, you want to get started?
Welcome guys to the very best fitness and combat sports podcast out there. I just want to talk about Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. Damn, Max is breaking all kinds of records with that fight.
First of all, I'm just going to put down, I put down on our last set Instagram the other night. If you're not following us, please do. That you shouldn't count out Calvin Kattar because he is as tough as nails. And I put up a video of him when he whacked around Jeremy Stephens. I put up a friendly reminder not to count out Calvin Kattar. And once again, even though he lost this fight,
he's tough.
He is tough as fucking nails. But I wanted to start by asking you the question. Do you feel like his corner should have thrown in the towel?
I don't know, because this was like the only, the second ever UFC fight that ended with a 50-42. Yeah. Right? That's pretty...
Oh, really?
Yeah,
really?
The second...
March
50-42. I think two judges... One judge, I think, did 50-43 and two judges did 50-42, I'm pretty sure. Two of them. So, I mean, there's... Of course, Holloway won that, like, easily. I don't know if... He was collecting a lot of damage. It was mainly just volume of strikes.
Yeah.
It just shows how tough Calvin is. I don't know if they should have thrown in the towel because, you know, it's difficult there. It's difficult because he was very, very, very tough. But they were. It was like the volume of strikes he was taking. I don't know. It's a tough decision for any coach to actually throw in the towel, stop the fight. Or usually when a fight gets stopped in that way and they're absorbing a lot of blows, it's done by doctor stoppage. It's not done by the coach. The coach doesn't usually stop it. I don't know. Sometimes these fighters can be too tough for their own good, but damn, he's tough. Damn, he's a beast himself. And everyone was saying, look, he's one of the best boxers in the UFC. And I agree. I think his boxing ability is so high in the featherweight division. Holloway's just on another level.
Yeah, it's because I'm so glad you brought that up as well, because Daniel Cormier even said it was like watching Muhammad Ali in there, the way that he just literally just danced around Calvin Kattar. Even though it's all these memes, like, of on not memes, but all like these like comparison photos of Muhammad Ali to Kevin Max Holloway. Look, there's one more thing I just wanted to bring up real quick. I saw this just earlier on. I just took a screenshot. This is from one of the guys we follow, Combat Talk. Shout out to Combat Talk. So listen to this. Max Holloway is nearing on 3,000 significant strikes landed. Has just destroyed Kattar. Has never been knocked down. I swear he got knocked down against Conor McGregor.
He's been taken down.
Okay. Never been knocked down. Has beaten Aldo twice. Fought at another weight class. Has been a dominant champion, and he's only 29.
It's because he came into the UFC, I think, at 21.
There you go.
One of his first fights was a short notice fight against Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor had a different opponent lined up, and then the guy pulled, like most of Conor's fight opponents do, pulled out, and Holloway slid in. I think we're about 2-3 weeks notice or something like that. So. I mean, that fight's brilliant as well. If to go back and watch Conor McGregor versus Max Holloway, that's a really good, a very technical fight to watch. I mean, Holloway's as technical as it comes. And what's interesting is he didn't spar this entire camp.
Again?
He didn't spar at all.
Again?
The reasoning why, I know you're going to ask, why didn't he do that? So the reasoning why was his last fight against Volkanovski, he argues that he should have won. 80 or 90% of the fans believe Holloway won. And a lot of the other athletes in the UFC believe Holloway won. So he thinks, well, if I didn't spar in that last fight, and that was one of my best, you know, performances in the octagon, why should I spar and risk that damage later on in this fight? So that's what he did. He didn't spar. Damn, he looks good. He looks fresh.
Yeah.
Just technically sound and very fast and nimble, and his own fight IQ just ability. He's always got such a good ability to switch things up on the fly, to and very creative in the cage.
He just has really good like combinations as well. We love the fruit. He threw a lot of body shots in this round. He threw a lot of hooks to the body, a lot of uppercuts. Another thing is just that he's, the fact that he's 29 as well, he's breaking his own records. There's two things I learned. One, what's it going to be like when this man in a couple of years is in his prime? Still in his 20s, still so much time to learn and improve. Especially he's very smart, because if he's not sparring, then he's not taking any damage in training, you know what I mean? He's saving it all for the fight. Next thing is, it shows again the gas tank on this man. Like, the round where he landed the most amount of strikes was the last round. There are very few fighters
on. I thought it was round four.
So sorry, fifth round. There are very few fighters, right, who can what's it called? There are very few fighters out there who can actually up the pace, but trim exponentially when it comes to those last two rounds. Usually, a lot of fighters, when it gets to those last two rounds, that's when they really start to gas out, because they've expended all their energy in the first, second, third rounds, because some are done by the third round. Nah, not him. He just goes up and up, basically. If there was like another round, he probably would have tried and got even more punches in. It just goes to show that, okay, he's a volume puncher with a tremendous gas tank. He doesn't have a lot of knockout power.
Whenever he has got a TKO, it tends to be he breaks them down with his volume. He breaks them down. Just let's say like Colby.
Yeah.
Gas tank for days. Incredible volume puncher. Very technical as well. Technically sound when it comes to his boxing skills.
Yeah.
He breaks them down. They curl up. Breaks them down more. And then he starts to fire off these heavier shots. And he gets the TKO. The ref calls it off. So that's typically what happens. I mean, everyone was so impressed by Max. I mean, a lot of people thought it was the performance of the year, and definitely one of his best performances yet against, I mean, Calvin Cater is a scary guy. A lot of people are still saying now he's got more to learn, but he'll be a champ one day. I mean, these New England guys are, you know, are tough bastards. The same with our Rob Font, tough bastard as well. So I'd like to see what happens next for Holloway, because, you know, most likely he's to fight the winner of Brian Ortega and Alex Volkanovski, or maybe has a second fight and then fights for the title. And I don't know how that goes. I mean, I've seen a lot of people saying I'd really like to see Zabit Magomed Sharipov against Max Holloway.
Who was Zabit's last opponent and when?
It was Calvin Cater. But that was only just a three round main event. So yeah, and a lot of people started to see that Zabit started to lose a little bit of energy by the end of the third round, but you can never really tell, because I'm pretty sure he won rounds one and two handedly. So I felt like maybe he might have just taken the foot off the gas pedal. And he might have just looked a bit slower. I'm not too sure, but I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that fight. I mean, definitely a big challenge for Zabit, because, I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, Zabit has no gas tank. You know, he can't operate at the same level as these high-paced fighters, but I'd love to see that fight against Holloway, because Holloway's so technically sound. In my eyes, Zabit's even more technically sound, especially kicking-wise, and he's just as dynamic as Holloway, if not more. I feel like he would be a challenge for Holloway, and I feel like it'd be an excellent test for Zabit to prove that, you know, he is world class and should fight for the title. Because I feel like 2020 was a bit of a shit year, because Zabit lost a couple fights due to cancellations and things like that.
Oh.
Especially with Yoyi Rodriguez as well. Yoyi Rodriguez was on Twitter today saying, oh, I'm not impressed.
Yeah.
He was not impressed by the performance, but I think that's him just stirring up a little bit of shit. Alex Volkanovski, our Australian champion, even had a little bit of stuff to say. Hey, he went, oh, hey, Max, you know, you did well, but you don't do those numbers against me. And he did some screenshots of the amount of significant strikes against him versus his other opponents. So it's interesting now. The featherweight division has always been very interesting. even through Aldo's reign, then Conor, and then so forth with Holloway, and now these mix of title contenders now. It's a fun time for the featherweight division. I just don't know whether we've got to wait for Yair Rodriguez because he's got a suspension. He had an issue with USADA. They have an app for USADA, and you have to update.
Check every supplement for that app, basically.
No. Oh, that too, but you have to say your whereabouts.
Oh, okay.
So during the day, you have to say, and it's like a timetable. So that means that the USADA can come to your residence. And apparently, he wasn't really updating the app, and USADA was getting frustrated because they kept trying to, you know, pop up and randomly drug test him, but he's not at the residence, and they have no information because he's not updating the app. So they suspended him. I think he's got a 6-month suspension, something like that. Nothing too long, nothing too short, but it's annoying because a lot of these guys are trying to get back in the octagon and start becoming active fighters again, so I don't know how that goes. But Zabit, he needs to fight soon. I'd love to see Zabit versus Max Holloway or Zabit versus Korean Zombie. Korean Zombie, I'd love to see him back in the octagon. I mean, we've already seen him fight Yair Rodriguez. Unfortunately, he lost in the last round with just a crazy knockout. But really, he was up on the scorecards. I think that because Yair Rodriguez is on the side, I think Holloway versus Zabit or Zabit versus Korean Zombie. That'd be so good to see.
Good. Well, there's a lot of up-and-coming fighters, man. There's 2021, I believe, will be the year for prospects.
Mm.
And also a lot of... because we're starting to see now this new influx of fighters and a lot of this previous generation, which we need to figure out a name for, you know what I mean, are starting to go out a little bit, you know, a lot more fighters now that we used to grow up on and now like starting to retire or starting to leave or starting to have their last run. Like we grew up on the Overeems, you know, we grew up in Teixeira's and Silva, you know, all that era is starting to go out a little bit, you know what I mean?
It is a shame because I mean that's a perfect segue into Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys have been in the UFC for such a fucking long time. I mean, we all talked about Diego Sanchez last week.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about that, Kenny Florian was on the same season of The Ultimate Fighter, right? Kenny hasn't fought in so long. I mean, he's fought at all different weight classes, 145, 155, etc. But he's now a commentator, and he's been doing that and a broadcaster for such a long period of time, right? Diego's still fighting. We just had Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown, which is most likely going to be it's most likely Matt Brown's last fight. Unfortunately, Matt Brown lost to Carlos Condit. Carlos Condit, I just banked on Carlos winning. Yeah. I knew he was going to win because whenever you see Matt Brown fight, you always see he really struggles with body shots. There seems to be some issue with his abdomen because when he gets hit with those, it's such an overreaction. And I'm not saying he's acting. I'm saying, like, something's not normal with his abdomen because he can't absorb the same body shots anymore. And I felt like, I mean, Carlos Condit is an absolute killer, an absolute stud. Did you know the story about Carlos Condit? So these UFC fighters, I don't know if you know this actually, but these UFC fighters were invited to hang out with the army. So I think they went to Afghanistan or some shit to just hang out with the army and that and just show them some stuff and basically just have like a nice
seminar slash
like just skills and training and things like that. Like a workshop, right? And then, I mean, Carlos Condit gets in the ring with one of these soldiers and the soldier says, oh, how hard do you want to go? And Condit says, as hard as you want to get hit. I'll hit you just as hard as you hit me. He was like, right, okay. And the soldier just turned it up and just tried to knock Carlos out. Just like any person, if they were strolling to in a gym and the UFC fighter, they want to fuck that fighter up because there's a huge feather in their cap, right? It's not a good thing. It's a shitty sparring partner. Mm-hmm. But
and it's cost a few fighters as well.
It costs a lot of fight. It costs them their chin having these gym wars. But Carlos Condit gets smacked and he goes boom. And he flicks it like a switch, knocks that soldier out, knocks him out in the ring. It's just funny because when I think of a fighter, I do think of the the Carlos Condits. You know, he's fought GSP. He's fought so many, so many people.
Knockout. But both had highlight knockouts. Like Carlos Condit, he had that knockout over Dan Hardy. When it was that left hand, it just like sent him flying backwards. And then also you got Matt Brown's probably one of the best elbows ever when he grabbed Diego Sanchez's right leg and just boom and just smashed him right across with the elbow. And then Diego Sanchez just hit the canvas like a sack of potatoes. His whole body just went limp.
Exactly. And
so it was, you know, it's but one thing I was quite proud of that they're very seasoned. And watching very seasoned fighters like go at each other, it's a nice thing to watch. But how much is, you know, too much, you know what I mean?
They've been fighting for such a long time. I think Matt Brown should retire. I think he's been fighting for such... I mean, I believe he has either number one or number two. He's either the number one or number two spot for most fights in the UFC.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Not most wins, but the most fights in the UFC, I'm pretty sure. I think most wins is Cerrone.
Yeah.
At least Cerrone. Or Matt Brown might be paired with Cerrone for number one or number two spot. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons why Matt Brown's still going is that he actually accredits a lot of his strength conditioning to Louis Simmons. There's this really good documentary where Matt Brown tells this amazing story. The documentary is called West Side versus the World, where Matt Brown tells him, because Louis Simmons was a massive fan of fighting.
This is West Side Barbell, yeah?
Yeah, in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
And what happened was Matt Brown says there was a point where he was having back issues. And then he went to Louis Simmons because he invented the reverse hyperextension, which is a machine.
Really, really good machine.
It was a good machine. And then he also worked a lot with like NFL players and basketball players and fighters and all that. And then Matt Brown heard about him and he went to him. And then he told the story that he walked in on his morning crew, I think, or his night crew, and they were doing a deadlifting session. And Louis Simmons was in his like 50s at the time or 60s at the time. And he had just suffered from like knee problems and back problems, and he had a throat and all that. And he was telling a story of how he just had his knee scoped, and then he walked in and he was doing a deadlift session, and then there was just blood pouring out of his knee and just blood pouring out of his eyes and his nose and all that because they were all maxing out and all. And then he just walked in there and Louis Simmons just saw him and he walked right up to him, wiped the blood from his face. And then with the same hand with the blood on it, he just says, "Matt Brown, big fan, love to have you in here." And then Matt's just like, "I was so disgusted, but I was so impressed." And then he started training with him ever since. You know what I mean?
What a quote. "I was so disgusted, but I was so impressed."
Yeah. Well, it's because like you wouldn't expect that from like a 60-something-year-old man, would you?
No. And most likely the reason why that these fighters are still around is probably really good strength and conditioning. We always see Matt Brown and Carlos Condit tend to be in very good condition. I mean, it's most likely the last fight for both fighters. I think Carlos Condit probably has maybe one or two more fights left in him. I mean, he only fought 3 months ago, and now he fought Matt Brown today, but I think that was Matt Brown's last fight. Realistically, with the cuts that they're doing, I think he's on the chopping block now, and I think he's retired. He could fight in other promotions, but
he wanted to fight Snoop Dogg.
Did he?
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Yeah, he called him out on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Oh well, that's
it was the funniest thing ever. Happen. He's like, "Snoop Dogg, I'll call him out, piece of shit." What do you think about it? Snoop Dogg's like what, 6'3", 6'4"?
Yeah, do you know what's interesting? I keep seeing him with the menu log and all the ads,
chicken,
right?
Chicken wings to the crib.
Yeah. And I keep saying, and it's funny that it says paid actor at the bottom. It's like, oh fuck, Snoop Dogg's not a paid actor. Oh fuck. Yeah, but you know, it's funny watching that because I was wondering like, how fucking old is he? And a lot of people, like, I was asking like, how old do you reckon Snoop Dogg is? And they're all like, oh, he's probably like 60. 58, 55. I look him up. 49. He's 49. What the fuck has he been consuming? Weed. He looks horrible. Yeah, but it's most likely more than just weed.
Weed every day.
He's tall as fuck, but he looks so old. He's so 49. Our dads look younger, and they're much older than him. Well, not much older, but like, sorry, dads. But Snoop Dogg looks horrible. He looks fucking horrible. It's funny he works for the UFC.
Yeah.
Works with, not for the UFC, but with the UFC, because he does a little bit of commentary himself.
Yeah.
He's not good. He's not good. It's really shit.
My video of him screaming, O'Malley.
And yeah. O'Malley. It's just like a...
O'Malley. And it's just Ryan Faber just laughing his ass off.
It's just like, it's more comedy than it is.
Yeah.
He clearly doesn't have a technical background or anything like that. It's just comedy. It just brings people.
Have you seen the videos of him striking?
I've seen a few videos. It's not brilliant.
I'll tell you, one celebrity boxer who's actually a pretty decent striker was Khalifa.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. He's been doing Muay Thai for a long time.
Yeah, he's actually got, got a bit jacked up, you know?
But it's easy to look a bit more jacked when he was so skinny before.
I know. Probably it was still smoking the weed, smoking a bag of reefer probably a day, traced with Tren and GH, you know, a little bit of that stuff. So
that's a good segue to weed. Weed in the UFC has changed their relationship with...
Oh, yeah.
So USADA has said that they're going to stop testing for marijuana. I mean, it's fair to say it doesn't really have performance enhancing effects, maybe on the day, because it can bring your mood down if you're really anxious for a fight, because it's incredibly stressful. But it's still weird with the Nevada Athletic Commission in the US. They will still test for it, and if you're over a certain I think it's nanogram per milliliter
THC,
or something,
aren't they?
Yeah, and they test for the amount of THC in your bloodstream, but they do say you should stop smoking at least a couple of weeks beforehand, and then it should be okay.
Yeah. Well, Nate Diaz is probably like, the fuck took you so long?
Well, Nick as well, because Nick was rumored to come back, and Nate's already had a supposed, you know, fight to be booked in at lightweight or something like that this year. They're just looking for possible opponents. It was funny that they released that Nate's going to get an opponent this year at lightweight, and it was the same day that they released that, you know, USADA is not going to test for marijuana anymore. I was like, coincidence?
Yeah.
I think not. Yeah.
Nah.
But
it's good. Well, it's good that they're taking this sort of change, because marijuana has been debated around the sports world for quite some time, especially in the UFC. And the UFC has had a pretty strict thing against it, you know, and a lot of fighters, I'm pretty sure a lot of fighters take it, I'm pretty sure a lot of professional athletes take it as well.
Of course.
I mean? Anything they can do to recreationally, you know, relax and just help take their mind off things, you know, so why not? But it's taken them years and years and years to get to this part, you know.
It's still very stagnant, because even in Australia, they allow CBD, but they're very strict on it. The only place that is allowed marijuana is, I think, Canberra or something like that, or ACT. I think so. I think ACT is where you can have marijuana. But the thing is, it gets weird there, because it's shown that the CBD oils and the CBD creams are actually way more effective when you have THC with it.
Oh, okay.
So it improves the actual positive effects of the creams and the oils and the ointments and things like that are used not just recreationally, that they're for, you know, looking after your body and getting rid of inflammation. It's weird now that the Nevada, I believe the Athletic Commission is still got a weird issue with, they don't quite see eye to eye with USADA. It's very strange, but I feel like maybe in a few years, even the Athletic Commission will ease up on their own rules, and they'll be like, oh, who cares?
Let me ask you a question, Jack. What does CBD stand for?
I don't know, actually.
Hold on, I'm just Googling it right
CBD
now.
Cannabis derivative or something?
Yeah, cannabidiol is the second most prevalent active ingredient of cannabis.
Oh, okay.
It's an essential compound of medical marijuana directly from the hemp plant, which is a cousin of the marijuana plant. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that's how I pronounce it. Cannabidiol?
Cannabidiol.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, well, that's the whole reason why marijuana got banned anyway, because they banned hemp at the same time, because the hemp industry was destroying the cotton industry. The cotton industry backed a lot of politicians to enforce legislation to get rid of marijuana. And it's slowly getting, you know, a little bit more popular and it's been popular for a long time, but it's getting more popular now. They're starting to actually bring it into legislation. I don't know. If you can have alcohol, then each to their own. Each to their own. I mean, I don't really see how an athlete would benefit from it other than calming your nerves on the day. So yeah. You can't have it on the day, but to stop a couple weeks beforehand, if you can't do that, you're not taking your you're not taking your career that seriously, are you?
Fair enough. Anyway, so this one thing I wanted to really bring up now that just happened with today's fights was for quite some time now, the UFC's had eyes on a very young superstar called Joaquin Buckley. Now, he rose to a bit of stardom when he performed that tremendous knockout of last year. Probably, I think it won knockout of the year. The spinning back kick from from having one leg and using all that momentum.
Yeah.
And it was about 1,000 angles and 1,000 videos and all these memes were made about it. He fought Alessio. Oh, God, I put up a post about him.
I want to make sure I don't butcher his name.
Yeah, me neither. I know it's Alessio D. Apologies, just getting it up. Alessio D. Chirico. Okay.
Now yeah, the reason that's why it's hard to pronounce some of these names.
The reason why I was telling people is you got to be careful is because this Alessio, he was on a losing streak. You know,
he was on two fight losing streak. I'm pretty sure.
Three fight losing streak.
Okay.
Yeah, and one of those losses was to Kevin Holland.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so what we got right now is a case of a man who was on a hype train, had a hype train taken by an underdog, because walking into that fight, Alessio was a massive underdog. So
yeah,
let me ask you the question right now, Jack. What does this mean for Alessio, and what does this mean for Joaquin?
I mean, Alessio, it means he keeps his job. I mean, most likely, if he lost this one, he would have been out of the UFC with the amount of cuts they're making. I mean, Alessio is a really nice guy. Even at the post-fight conference, he went and said, he finished up really quickly. He said, listen, guys, I respect you guys and your job. However, I'm going to leave now. I don't really like it that you only interview the winner. He said, sorry, guys, he left. So, he's a very, very well-spoken guy. I mean, the way he fights is very technical, and he's very smooth and crisp with his striking as well. What does it mean for Joaquin Buckley? It's tough because Buckley got that knockout up against another up-and-comer, Impa Kasanganai, but it's tough because he also lost against Kevin Holland. Seems like Kevin Holland's beating a few people.
No, Joaquin Buckley hasn't fought Kevin Holland.
Yes, he has.
When did he fight him?
Last year. Knocked him out.
Okay.
Or it might have been 2019. No, it was 2020. Early 2020. So, I mean, this might be controversial might be controversial because a lot of people really like Joaquin Buckley. And I like him too.
Yeah.
But I feel like at middleweight, he's far too small.
Really?
He's big in size,
yeah.
But his height his height's too small.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
He is a big boy. He looks more like a bodybuilder than he does a fighter. But the way he moves around,
because he lost his of a head kick. Because
The way he moves around the cage, he's very dynamic, and he moves like a proper fighter with proper footwork. He doesn't move around like a full on muscle brown freak, but I think it's better if he moves to welterweight.
Yeah.
Because he's too short for middleweight. Most likely, if you're in a division, you want to be at the top. You want to get the strap, right? Could you do me a favor? Could you look up his height for me?
Yeah.
Joaquin Buckley's height. Because most likely, he's in the
73 meters.
That's 5'9"?
Yeah, roughly. Good question. Hold on.
To put that into perspective, the middleweight champion Israel Adesanya is 6'4". That's an enormous
5'8".
So he's 5'8". He's too short for middleweight.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I think he should move to welterweight. I think he should, because He's huge. He might have an issue, cutting a little bit of weight, but usually it's easier for people to cut weight if they've got a lot of muscle because they can store a lot of water and they can shift a lot of water weight very quickly, especially if they're doing water loading a couple of weeks before. I think you should move to welterweight. He's too small. He's too short, and he tries to cover the distance, and this is why he lost to Kevin Holland, was he had to be... He was almost like a really angry pit bull. He was trying to cover distance really quickly and try and strike with Kevin Holland. And Kevin Holland, counter strike. And he just clipped him and he went down. He's too small for middleweight. I know he did brilliant against Impa. I mean, that KO in itself is brilliant and that will always be on his highlight reel. He needs to move to welterweight. Mm-hmm. Middleweight's too big. He's too short. Israel Adesanya, to put it in perspective, is 6'4".
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Izzy is a tall guy for the division, right? But there's quite a lot of people out there that are like the 6'1", the 6'2", the 6'3", the 6'4". I mean, Nate Diaz is 6'1", right? And he fights lightweight or welterweight, right? And now we've got, you know, it doesn't make sense for... It frustrates me because I think Buckley's a huge talent. Right, I think he's a very powerful guy. I think he moves to welterweight. Mm. I think he moves to welterweight. You know, there's a theory that if you are at a more natural weight, you feel better, you operate better. But I feel like it's too high a I think with a proper diet and a proper regime, not that he doesn't already have one of those, but that will dial him into welterweight. I think he'd be a fucking monster at welterweight. He's too small for middleweight for me. Mm-hmm. So next week, we've got Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny.
Okay.
That's going to be on Thursday for us. Yeah. I think in the States it'll be Wednesday. So it's the 20th of January for them, 21st of January for us. That's a damn good fight. I mean, Chiesa has been a commentator for a long period of time. And he certainly settled into the role. And now he's going to fight Neil Magny, who is similar to Kevin Holland, who just fights often, regular, and tries to fight as often as possible. And it wasn't that long ago that he was 5-0 in 1 year. So definitely an interesting matchup for me.
It's good because Michael Chiesa, the last time he fought was literally pretty much this time last year against Rafael dos Anjos, where he beat him by a decision. And then he only fought once in 2019 against Diego Sanchez, which is also by decision. And then he fought twice in 2018. One was a loss by submission to Anthony Pettis, but he also beat Carlos Condo by submission in the second round. So the man's got a good record of 17-4. He's got a phenomenal story behind him. Do you know the Ultimate Fighter story behind him?
Yeah, he lost. Was it his dad? His dad. He lost to his dad. Came into the finale and beat. It was Quinta.
Yeah, Aliquinta.
Why do you guys have such fucking hard names to say?
Yeah. Well, it's just a story about how he's been a very, very unlucky guy, you know, and he was on that bus crash when McGregor threw the dolly at.
You can see when he got hit with the glass.
Yeah, he was meant to fight that time.
Ooh, tough one. I honestly don't know. I know that he originally fought at lightweight and he was having a lot of trouble. And I think he fought, was it Pettis he fought at lightweight? And I think after he lost at lightweight, he said he'd actually considered not fighting ever again, right? He said he actually contemplated retiring, but then he had a heart of heart with himself, had to think about it. He was like, bro, I'm not even in my prime. Why would I miss out on that? So he moves to 170. Fuck, he's unreal.
Yeah.
He looks so good. I mean, there's that famous picture of when he has his hands over his face and he goes, that's my last time.
Yeah.
When he was hitting 155, because he said he is huge. He is huge for 155. And he's actually a big, like, big frame for 170, actually. Yeah.
And he's fighting a guy who's exactly the same age as you now. But Neil Magny is a very, very active fighter. Very. We're looking at a guy who's fought 17, that's 21 times in the UFC. Versus a guy who's fought 32, had 32 professional fights. Mm. So that's big. And plus, Neil Magny was quite active last year. I mean, he fought three times and he won all three of them. So you got a guy, they're both on winning streaks at the moment. Mm. That's another thing. But the thing is with Neil Magny is not the kind of dude. Last year, he didn't win any fights by knockout. He won all of his fights by decision. So other than 2008, he hasn't knocked anyone out since 2018. That was Craig White when it was a first round knockout. But other than that, a majority of his wins have all gone to decision.
Yeah.
So we got a guy who's known for putting people away via submission or knockout versus a guy who wins by, well, other than that, actually, no, go back on what I said. You got two guys who win a majority of their fights by decisions. So, were we expecting this fight to go a distance? Yes. That's what
I would expect it to go the distance. However, I mean,
is it going to be 5 rounds?
Most likely, if it's a main event, it'll be five. I think I favor Chiesa for that. I think Neil Magny's gas tank has been proven. He does very well. He's a very active fighter. He's always training. Chiesa, there's something about Chiesa I like about him. He's got like a bit of grit behind him. And most likely, if he was to win, it would be by submission because he's incredible on the ground. He's so good on the ground. His jiu-jitsu is and his ground game is incredible. I think it's truly, I don't think it's not underrated, but I don't think it gets the credit that it deserves. I think Chiesa's ground game is something to be reckoned with, and I think it does. So it's very high level. I think it poses threats for Magny for sure. And I think if Chiesa is ever in any trouble in the stand up and in the exchanges, he can quite easily, you know, go for a takedown, inside trip, something like that, and then start moving inside side control and actually get to work. Because if Magny gives him his back, you don't want Chiesa on your back. You certainly do not. I that's a really, really tough fight for most people.
Good. Now, there's another fighter I wanted to talk about who's also fighting on the prelims of the Chiesa versus Magny, and that is up-and-coming fighter Mason Jones. So Mason Jones is Welsh. And
Welsh fighter.
And he was fighting in Cage Warriors, was it?
Yeah, he was a two-division champion in Cage Warriors. And now, I think he's only a couple years older than us.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think he's that old.
I'm just checking right now. He is
24, 25. Just jump on his wiki. No, but he looks incredible. Looking at his Cage Warrior days, he's very fast, he's very quick. I think the amount of experience, to be fair, having the experience of being a Cage Warriors champion in just one division is incredible. But two divisions is, you know, even better. There's only been two other fighters that have done that. It's been, Dan Hart. Well, let's bring back to Cage Warriors champions. We've had Michael Bisping,
yep.
We've had Dan Hardy, we've had Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor is also a two-division champion at Cage Warriors. So it's not super uncommon. However, for him to be at that level, he's definitely a force to be reckoned with. He's still undefeated, correct?
Yeah, he is undefeated. He's had 10 professional fights.
Yeah, 10 and
0. Zero losses. He's 25 years old.
25 years old.
He's a few years older than us.
Yeah, just three.
He's in. The reason why everyone's got eyes on him was because the last person to hold two belts simultaneously in Cage Warriors was Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
So, and of course, he's fighting out of Ireland and Mason's fighting out of Wales and he is fighting at, he's also fighting, at, he fights at welterweight.
Yeah.
And he also fights at lightweight as well. So, you know, McGregor also fights at welterweight and lightweight, so I'm guessing that's where the comparisons are coming across. But it's also the sheer confidence.
What's his height, by the way?
His height? Okay.
Most likely around 5'10", something like that, right?
5'10", correct.
5'10", okay.
5'10",
so correct. Most likely he's going to fight at lightweight,
yeah.
I believe. Can you tell me what is the bout scheduled for next week? Is it at lightweight or welterweight? Because most likely a frame at 5'10". Will probably be lightweight, but I wouldn't be surprised for at welterweight as well.
It is going to be a lightweight fight against Mike Davis. So now Mike Davis is also, is known as the Beast Boy.
Very good Muay Thai fighter.
Yeah, he is. He, however, he lost to Gilbert Burns in lightweight, but he beat Thomas Gifford in via knockout at... He hasn't fought since 2019.
Yeah, quite a long time to have a layoff, but it's not uncommon for most fighters since 2020 was just a shit year for most people. Mm-hmm. But to lose against Gilbert Burns, who's now fighting for the title,
yeah,
not a bad fighter to lose to at all. I mean, arguably, I think Gilbert Burns is going to be Kamaru's toughest matchup for sure. So, yeah, so... Even though he's lost to Gilbert Burns, it's certainly not a stain on his record because we've seen how good his Muay Thai is. He's an incredible Muay Thai fighter. The stand-up's there. It would be interesting to see how Mason matches up with him, you know, because a lot of people are banking on him being a new up-and-coming fighter, especially from Wales. There's not that many Welsh fighters. I think there's only three UFC fighters that come from Wales, I'm pretty sure. Only three. So,
who are they? Well, obviously, we got Welsh Dragon. Obviously, what's his name? Paul Felder himself.
Irish Dragon.
Sorry, what? Fucking, hold on.
He's not from Wales.
I swear it was. Hold on.
No, he's American. He's Irish and German, but he's American. It's the Irish Dragon. Welsh Dragon? What the fuck?
Irish Dragon. Oh, Welsh Dragon. Sorry. Welsh Dragon, I'm thinking of, is a bodybuilder. Don't worry.
Fucking.
Yeah, my bad.
Wait, a bodybuilder called the Welsh Dragon?
There's a bodybuilder known as the Welsh Dragon and all that, so.
All right. I want to talk about Henry Cejudo. Now, Henry is often on Twitter. I mean, actually not often, always. He's always on Twitter, always on Instagram. He's always talking shit. We've even seen him, helping out Borrachina, Paulo Costa. He's gotten a little bit fluffy on the off season. Now that he's retired, you know, he's enjoying the good life. He's got a little bit of money in his pocket. He's getting a bit fluffy. And he's often talking a bit of shit on Twitter saying, you know, Davison Figueiredo and Alex Volkanovski, you know, I'm coming for your belts and shit like that. But he's not really doing anything. I actually think he could come back in 2021 or 2022 because... His last fight was against Dominic Cruz where, you know, he smashed him in the first round, but there was no crowd. And I feel like Henry really enjoys a crowd, and I think the reason why he left was also a ploy to get more money as well. So they could definitely set up Henry Cejudo coming to fight at flyweight or bantamweight or something like that, and then whatever venues he wants to go from there. But he's... not really in fighting shape right now. He's a bit fluffy right now. There's a huge difference between like him shredded beforehand when he's fighting for the bantamweight title, and then there's him now who he's got a bit of a belly. He's enjoying himself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Henry will come soon, or do you reckon he's retired forever?
Good question. You put it all on the line if he came back. He puts everything on the line, you know what I mean? He would have to start again from scratch, you know what I mean? And you now Davison Figueroa, and then you got Brandon Moreira, and you got Brandon Royvo, and then at featherweight, we got all the bloody kings of, at flyweight and bantamweight, you know, it's just bantamweight. We got TJ Dillashaw coming back, we got Aldo in the mix, we got Piotr Jan. I mean, I'm just...
I wouldn't mind seeing Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw.
I know, but the division's just moved on. That's all.
It's hard to take that time off. Moved on
very, very well since the loss of Cejudo. Cejudo was a pioneer for flyweight and bantamweight because there was a time when we talked about that Dana wanted to get, before we even started this podcast, we used to have conversations about the fact that Dana wanted to get rid of the bantamweight division because he's always had issues with Demetrius Johnson. Who even, well, what for two reasons. One, the guy was basically unbeatable. Two, the guy doesn't sell. You know, bantamweight and flyweight has never sold, really, right up until today. Now, you got to beg the question, was it because of Cejudo? Probably. But is it because of Cejudo right now that the bantamweight is popular and all that? Not quite. I feel like it's got its own
attention. It brought some attention, but it's
come a long way since it lost to Cejudo.
I mean, with Davison now, I think the reason why the flyweight stayed was not only Cejudo's, like, you know, skill level. It's mostly the talking shit part. Henry Cejudo doing the King of Cringe and all the talking shit brought a lot of attention. Davison Figueiredo, who's now just like an angry fuck. He's just an angry little bastard. And he is an absolute killer. And he just talks shit all the time. Davison Figueiredo and Henry Cejudo, they talk shit. And it's just not, DJ's kind of cup of tea. It's just not what he's really done. He's always carried himself more as a martial artist than a prized fighter. And sometimes that upsets Dana White because he wants to line his pockets. And it's difficult. I still think that DJ is the GOAT, but I don't think he did any favors with himself not promoting himself as much as Henry Cejudo and Davison Figueiredo.
Yeah.
It's difficult there.
There's been times, of course, in the past where Dana's just not got on well with certain fighters, and it's been blatantly obvious, like Tyron Woodley. He's always had a hard time with Tyron Woodley, you know what I mean? He's had a hard time with Demetrius Johnson and... You know, and he's had a hard time. The UFC's always had a hard time with the Diaz brothers. Like, oof.
Yeah, that's been rough as well. I mean, Dana's been having also a hard time with Khabib now.
Yeah.
Because it was, I believe it was yesterday, he was at UAE Warriors and they were filming looking for a fight. You know that segment that they do for the
YouTube?
I'm going to watch that. But they did that with, I think it was Dean Thomas and Matt Serra. And they were watching the fights there, and that's going to be an amazing episode to watch on YouTube. But he was with Khabib, and they sat down and had a chat, and he was trying to work his magic, and they did a little bit of teasers. Then today they said that we were going to release on ABC what his decision was. And it was basically a big like flop.
Yeah,
it was a big like cliffhanger, and it was so hyped. Like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? It was literally like Khabib literally was like, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
It was like a maybe.
Yeah.
Instead of a yes or a no, and if he's going to clear up the situation, he was like...
What's wrong with maybe? A phone call then for that?
It's good content. It's good content for him to go in person. Yeah, I think Dana wanted to go in person.
Balls, you know, and now it's like, it's a great... You know what it was? The entire UFC community has just got blue balls.
Well,
yeah.
They got blue balls for another week.
You know, she doesn't pull out, just... Gives you a weak ass hand job and then leaves. That's literally what the UFC is just giving us at the fans right now. A weak ass hand job. And now they're just sitting there like, well, are you going to finish this? don't look at me like that. You know I'm right.
But the thing is, though, I think the reason why I was there was to like try all his little
techniques,
all his little skills, all his little negotiation tools to get Khabib to maybe
bust his nuts.
Yeah, okay. yeah, that's a technical term in business. I don't know. Khabib just did a hard maybe. Yeah. I'll watch UFC 257, and if I'm interested, I'll come back or I'll.
Well, Khabib's going to be in the building. Conor's going to be in the building. Everyone's like, I love Dustin, but I kind of want Conor to win just so Conor can just cool his ass out right there and we start another brawl right there. You know what I mean? Like I said in the last podcast, there's going to be like a absolute row of security dividing the two fighters, and probably that's what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Because even though it's in Abu Dhabi, I'm pretty sure they're allowing fans in the arena.
They've already sold out of all tickets. Yeah. I mean, they were allowed fans in today as well.
Yeah.
But most likely for the 23rd, there's going to be a lot more people in there. They've already sold out all the tickets. Even there's people from New Zealand that have got tickets and things like that. So that's going to be a crazy, crazy fight. We know Umar Nurmagomedov, who's got a lot of hype around him. He's going to be fighting on the prelims.
Mm-hmm.
So Khabib's going to be in his corner. He's going to be one of the corner men for that. So he's going to be watching the fight. He's going to be on UFC Fight Island, which is not that big an island, contrary to some.
And then they will just cross paths at one point and then just...
Most likely, they will probably have to separate them for a little bit. Most likely, as long as Conor's head's still in the game. And then after, you know, Conor's fight, and if he does win against Dustin Poirier, then he can call out Khabib and...
Yeah, he's like, where is that little weasel? Where is that little rat?
The scurry.
Weasel.
wonder if they're going to sit Khabib right on the desk next to Dana. Just watching just the fight.
Eye contact. Just wanted to see it happen.
Conor kind of just goes like that.
Or even better, Khabib jumps into the cage.
He interviews the fighter.
Oh, man. Just the amount of tension that would probably just be in that space. Oh, my God. Anyway, so there's one more thing that we... Well, there's kind of one thing I actually want to talk about because I just wanted to move a little bit away from the UFC because that's what we've talked about today. Now,
Wait. We'll talk about the other two fights that have been set up for UFC 260.
You mean 257?
No, it's 260. UFC 260 is going to be Stipe versus Ngannou 2.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to have Brian Ortega versus...
Yeah, okay then. Right, we
won't give predictions. I'm just wondering, what do you reckon of these fights? Yeah, Brian Ortega versus Alex Volkanovski is booked, and it's going to be on the same card as Stipe versus Francis Ngannou 2.
Well, Volkanovski and Ortega, obviously, Ortega's a better fighter now. So, Ortega's much, much more improved. He's much, much more skillful. He's much, much more calm. He doesn't have any hair anymore, so he's got better aerodynamics. fuck it. And it's the same with Ngannou, really. I feel like this is champions against, you know, it's like a second chance for them because Ngannou and Brian Ortega, they both get another shot at the title because I'm pretty sure Holloway was champion when he fought Ortega.
Yes.
Yeah. And Stipe and Ngannou, they've already fought before, but Ngannou is just a fucking boogie, man. Ngannou is just mad swings. But it showed that last time he fought Stipe just outskilled him. And he just
out-wrestled him.
Yeah, out-wrestled him, outskilled him. So I'm eager to see how Ngannou goes this time, what more skills he brought to the table, because he's just been smashing dudes left, right, and center. Like, do you remember when when the first ever UFC we had during COVID was, Ferguson versus Gaethje. And then I was watching it in my garage, and I literally just felt Ngannou's punches through my laptop. Just, when he just put fucking Rosenstrike to sleep, he just took the soul from that man.
I believe he's improved technically, but I don't think he's certainly not technically on the same level as Stipe.
Yeah.
But fucking Ngannou's power, he's just got the ultimate equalizer. The ultimate equalizer is just his right hand. Suitors, he just bangs you with a big right hook, big right cross, and it equalizes the rest of the round. The whole round, Stipe could be beating him, right? And to be honest, I'm going to be favoring Stipe in this matchup again. But Ngannou's, he's got the ultimate eraser, the ultimate equalizer. It can take away those last three rounds of dominance and just boom, can knock someone out.
Yeah. It's just that he's won his last four fights. The last time he fought Stipe was 2 years ago. So a lot comes in 2 years.
Certainly for someone that is so athletically gifted like Ngannou as well.
Oh, also on that fight, March as well, they're also planning on having Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis.
That would be really good because that got moved because of COVID, unfortunately. That'd be brilliant because that kind of sets up who could possibly be a secondary contender for the heavyweight division.
Agreed.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Anyway, so do you want to steer a little bit away from UFC now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Since we're towards the end of the podcast, there's one thing that's been on everybody's minds this weekend, and that was when One Division, season one, two episodes were dropped on Friday. I don't even know where to start. Like, for 2 hours, I was just like, what's going on? What are they trying to prove? What are they trying to do?
I thought I was watching Bewitched or something. Yeah. Like that. That's what it's set on. It's set on the 1970s Bewitched shows. And
we reviewed the trailers like months ago, like right up in the early days of the podcast. We were reviewing the trailers and I just said, mate, it's so weird.
It's set up like its own little pocket reality, and it's set on like all different shows. It's almost like a Truman Show, right? Yeah. A different reality. And then you can see there's people looking in, and there's like a radio, and it's got little Easter eggs here and there. Like, you know, it showed the little advert where it was the toaster. When they pressed the toaster, it was the sound of the Iron Man like repulsor thing. And
yeah.
And they said, oh, it's brought to you by Stark Industries.
And there was also the watch that was Strucker's.
And it was had the Hydra thing on it.
Yeah, and Strucker was the name of the scientist that performed experiments on yeah. Wanda. And what was her brother's name?
Ooh,
Maximoff Twins.
I usually just call him Quicksilver, but it's yeah. not really. It's not in the X-Men MCU part, is it?
No. Well, he's in.
Petro. Is it Petro?
I think it's Petrov or something like that. Yeah, hold on.
God, but they had a few things like a few jokes like that's just the Sokovian that's just the Sokovian greeting. They had a few Easter eggs here and there. I just thought it was fucking weird because each episode's they kind of figure out something like something's not quite right. Like how did we meet? I don't know when we meet. When was our anniversary? This can be our anniversary. It's very strange what little... It's almost like a dream. It's almost like they're set in a dream. You know when you're in a dream, things are weird, but you just, for some reason in your mind, you're like, it's always been like this. Your mind accepts things, right? So it almost seems like it's a dream reality or a dream state that they're in and that some people are trying to look in and watching and maybe even intercept them and be like, hey, you're actually, you know, you're not supposed to be here and things like that. It's a bit weird because now it's set off on a cliffhanger where they've actually had a kid and then it goes into color and it's set in like maybe the 1980s. Yeah. It's weird how each episode it keeps transitioning through time and things like that.
Yeah. Well, let me just start by saying it's all these like reviews about it. Oh, it's amazing, it's awesome, it's best TV show. I'm like, no, it's not. It's actually quite poor for a fucking Marvel TV show. The Marvel sets, I'm not like, I don't think it's bad. Terrible, but I'm saying it's a bit sleazy, you know what I mean?
I don't think it's poor. I think it's just, it hasn't really grabbed our attention with anything in the first or second. It's not its normal action-packed thing. It's almost very, like, quite weird and a bit different and they're trying stuff other things out new, but they haven't really dropped anything that has piqued our interest or anything like that.
Well, the only thing that sort of got my attention was in the end of the second episode, spoiler alert, don't care if you haven't watched it, it's been 48 hours when that beekeeper dude just comes out of the sewer and then Wanda just goes no, and then all of a sudden they reverse back time.
Yeah.
So is Wanda like controlling the present?
It's like her pocket reality. It's almost like a dream where you're lucid dream and you can change a few things. You don't like that? The nightmare's about to happen. I'm going to change things. So that's what she's doing. And then it's a dream state where like, well, we haven't had a kid. And then boom, she's like fucking about to pop. She's like in her third trimester. And then all the color starts to come in. Like there's a few things where color is like there's that helicopter. She touches the helicopter and it's the only thing that's color. And then later down in the episode, everything starts to transform to color. They've got kids. They've got a different life. It's weird because there's little different Easter eggs. It's just, I don't know what to make of it yet. I believe it's weekly episodes now and I'll still watch the show, but it hasn't really piqued my interest yet. It hasn't.
A very, very poor start.
It's quite a slow start, to be honest. I don't know how many episodes are supposed to come out. But it's very slow. Yeah. It's very, very slow.
Because do you remember when season two of The Mandalorian started, the first episode, how killer that episode was?
Yeah, well, they usually try and pique interest right away. And when they drop,
that's what you need to do in TV
shows. When they drop two episodes, I assume that these were going to be two massive episodes. Yeah. And that was really going to hook it in. Whereas
they don't.
Both episodes were very similar in the fact that nothing really happens.
Yeah.
They're just kind of, you know, they're taking inspiration from different like Bewitched and all these different other shows. It's a bit weird how it all has been put together. I don't know. The one thing that I found that was interesting was her friend Agnes.
Yeah.
Her friend Agnes, apparently there's been theories that she could be Agatha Harkness, which is a witch in the... She's a witch in the Marvel comics.
Okay.
And so she makes a lot of stuff saying like, oh, you can just whip this up like magic and things like that. It's almost like she could potentially be a witch herself and she could maybe be the villain that could be in this pocket reality. I'm not too sure. Because we do see, at the end of each episode, we see it fading back. We see fake credits rolling. And we see someone sitting at a desk. There's a roadcaster at the desk. Did you notice that?
Yeah,
there's a road. That's cool. And then it shows a screen where there's two waves. One's red, one's green. And some people said, well, does that mean maybe there's two people in a simulation? And that one of them is Vision and one of them is... It's just weird because why is also...
Vision's
why
alive.
Is Vision there when he died?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's all very weird. We don't really know what to make of it yet. It hasn't really grabbed our attention that much, but I'll still watch it. I'm still interested to know where this leads. It's just, it started off very slow and very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to leave it there?
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. I hope you guys enjoy this. Yeah. If you haven't already, please subscribe. Press the subscribe button. You get notifications. If you want to look at all our social media, all our social media will be in the description below. Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, everything. Everything will be there on Facebook as well. So thank you very much for listening. Thanks for listening to our Combat Sports and Fitness podcast. Thank you very much.
Love you guys.
Bye-bye. Catch up. Bye-bye.